There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Feisty match that promises to be. Luis Suarez looking to redeem himself after those two disappointing finishes to his last two World Cups. Cristiano Ronaldo looking to do what he did 2 years ago at the European Championships, inspire an average Portugal side to make a very, very late run and who knows, maybe go all the way in this FIFA World Cup. We'll look ahead to all those matches. We've got qualifying over in Austria for the Formula One Austrian Grand Prix. That is underway. Teams now, cars have 18 minutes to get into that top 15. Mark Archer is across that one. But first and foremost, Sean O'Shea, I will bring you back into this conversation. You took a little bit of a breather when we were talking cricket and tennis in that previous hour. You've got team news, my man.
I have got team news. Right, okay, so we'll start with France because that's pretty straightforward. This six changes from the last game, from the greatest game of the World Cup against Denmark. So they're going to go look at it will be a mixture of between a 4-2-3-1 and a 4-3-3, but Lloris in goals, Pavard, Varane, Umtiti and Hernandez are that make up the back four. Midfield, you've got Pogba, Kante, Matuidi, and then a front three, if you like, of Griezmann, Giroud and Mbappe. Now, on paper, that looks like a tremendous starting 11 for France. If we move across to Argentina, I would say I'm very disappointed with their starting lineup. Pavon has come in for Higuain, no recognised striker in the Argentinian squad at all. I think again they're going to cross between a 4-2-3-1 and a 4-3-3. Armani stays in goals, Mercado, Otamendi, Rojo and Tagliafico across the back, Baniga, Mascherano and Perez in midfield, with Pavon, Di Maria, the kind of wide attacking players if you like, and then the man himself as a lone striker or a false 10 or false 9, whatever you want to call him, the captain.
It's reminiscent of Spain in 2010 playing without really a recognised striker.
Yeah, and it just looks super cautious for me, and I don't think Argentina have the quality at the back to be able to try and defend against that starting 11 of France. I would have gone more attacking. I would have had Aguero in there, I would have had Dybala in there, and I would really have gone for that, and that for me, how it's set up, looks like it's going to be very cautious from Argentina.
Sean, you talk about that cautious lineup by Argentina leaving some power, some strike power on the bench. What is the reasoning the coach would have gone that way? Would he try and keep the
game tight? Is making the decision?
Yeah.
Why has Messi chosen the team lineup? Does he want to keep the game close? Does he want to take it deep into the second half and maybe they can nip a goal and hold on? Is that sort of the philosophy? And if they're behind, then they've got some guys off the bench that can change the game up. Is that sort of they're not going out to score to win a 4-3 match here?
No, they're not. You can see by the starting 11, like I said, it's obviously super cautious. The game plan must be to try and keep France at bay. Limit chances for them, goal scoring chances for them, and then maybe try and nick a goal on the break, and that'll be to use Di Maria or Pavon as an outlet, feed the ball into Messi, and again the pressure now is on the big man to score the goal.
France haven't really looked like a team that monopolised possession, Shawnee. I mean, you've got to look at who their opponents have been as well, but I don't think, even against Australia, it wasn't like they had the lion's share of the ball. You'd expect Argentina to shade the possession in this particular match.
Well, I would have done, depending on the team selection, but I don't think it's going to go that way. Now, you're right, France haven't been controlling in any of the games, really, or over-dominating with possession. But I just think the way that lineup looks now, I think they're probably happy to let France have possession and try and nick a goal on the counter-attack, from what it looks like from the setup, anyway.
It just seems Dybala, Higuain, Aguero, you will not find a more lavish bench than any other side in the World Cup. It just seems that speaks to me to the dysfunctionality of this Argentinian setup, the fact that they still don't know what their best team is. I think this could be a fourth different team for Argentina. They don't have a settled side. That's a huge worry.
It is a worry.
And Aguero and Higuain, are they in the best frame of mind mentally to come on and change the game if they need to? Because they don't know whether they're coming or going in this Argentina team. They don't know if they're regular starters or if they're not. Paulo Dybala, who's such a key player for Juventus, and yes, I get that he plays in the same position as Lionel Messi. It's very difficult to integrate both of them, but there must have been a way to do that.
Yeah, I think there is a way to do it, and I think Aguero has every right to be very annoyed and frustrated that he's not playing. I mean, he started the first game and scored a great goal. I think he should have been allowed to take the penalty that Messi missed. I think he should have been able to take that penalty because his penalty scoring record is very, very good. I think the World Cup could have been very different for Argentina. Look, they got through the group, but I think if they would put more trust in Aguero, if the manager put more trust in Aguero to play and score goals, it would take a little bit of the pressure off Messi. But for me, yeah, I'm not sure if he's thinking at all, but I just think that they're going to try and defend this out and try and nick a goal and be super cautious here.
Well, when you think about it like that, and you think that they were lucky in many ways against Iceland, even the 1-1, they were abject against Croatia, and they were certainly lucky in that game against Nigeria. Nigeria had some great chances midway through that second half. Lionel Messi giving Argentina the lead. I think it was Moses that pulled one back on the penalty spot, and then that late goal from none other than Marcus Rojo for Argentina with his right foot. Sean O'Shea, Chris McCarthy couldn't believe what he was seeing.
It was
from the man who does start, by the way, at left back for Argentina. Maybe he'll be required to produce the winner again today.
Maybe he will. But that right foot finish was reminiscent of your left foot finish in the Neymar fives of the week that we won.
Yeah, it was mine was a little bit further out, wasn't it, Sean?
It was a much cuter finish.
Yeah, the less said about that, the better. Arch, I'm conscious that qualifying over in Austria is underway. What's the update?
Yeah, Q1 underway for the Austrian Grand Prix, and times are all on the board now for Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, Valtteri Bottas and Kimi Raikkonen, which they've done enough so far that should see them through to Q2. Lewis Hamilton leads the way. He had an engine upgrade recently for Mercedes, and he looks unstoppable at the moment given the form. So he leads the way currently with a 104.294. Roman Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen should also be through. They are 5th and 6th on the times. One car that hasn't gone so well is Daniel Ricciardo. His first go, he's only through an 8th place at the moment, so he may need to go out and put out another fast time to make sure he gets through and guarantees to go through to qualifying 2. So Lewis Hamilton, the quickest, Bottas in 2nd, so Mercedes dominating there, Raikkonen, Verstappen, and then Sebastian Vettel. That's your top 5 so far in Q1.
We're watching pictures of the French players in their training tops coming out to warm up out there on the pitch for the first round of 16 game. It will kick off in 45 minutes time. We're very much into the build-up of this now. Social media is awash with images of both the French and Argentinian players. Lionel Messi, so much focus, so much scrutiny on him. His former teammate Pablo Zabaleta has been speaking to the BBC to say of course he feels the pressure. Fans and some parts of the media in Argentina are on him too much. He feels it. He's a human being. It's not easy to be the best player in the world. Some things he does on a football pitch make you question whether he really is a human being, Sean O'Shea. But the French players are out there. We'll talk more about this French team when we come back, because we've spoken a lot about Argentina and their problems. What about France? They haven't quite hit their straps yet. I think that's the word for it in this tournament thus far. Is today the day that Paul Pogba and his team of very talented teammates can actually announce themselves at this World Cup? More when we come back.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill in association with Barasti Superdome. Football lives at Barasti this summer.
We are now just 40 minutes away from the start of France versus Argentina. I am excited. Sean O'Shea is excited. Mark Archer is equally excited. And we've been in touch as well with a French friend of ours who was on The Grill this time a couple of weeks ago, Arnaud. He was nervously watching that opening win for France against Australia. They've come a little bit further on in the tournament now, but he is very nervous. He's a nervous man watching over in Dubai as his team prepare to take on Argentina. Now, we've talked about Argentina's negative approach, or certainly a team lineup, Shawnee, that has caution running throughout it. No recognised striker, no Sergio Aguero, no Gonzalo Higuain. What about the French lineup? And why do you think this French team does not play the kind of sparkling football that the names we see written down on that team sheet suggest it would?
I think it comes down to a couple. For me, they don't seem to have that togetherness. It's almost like 11 individuals for me, and they don't seem to have. They don't look like they have that belief that they can go and win the World Cup. Like you said, you go through every single player there in the starting 11, and it's so strong. And there's no reason why people say that on paper. They have one of the strongest squad in the World Cup. But from watching the games, been very uninspiring for me, and I just don't see that. Like I said, that togetherness or that belief that they can go on and win it. But look. Watching them warm up now here in the excitement building and looking at that starting 11, I was Argentina about 10 minutes ago, but I think I might have switched across to France now.
It's a bit of a coin flip, isn't it, Arch? I mean, we just don't know who's going to turn up, and that's the thing. When you've got two teams that have yet to show their true form and their true potential, more surprising perhaps from a French perspective, because they are the finalists of Euro 2016. They've been playing pretty good football in the build-up to this. Argentina, well documented that they had struggled in the build-up. They'd only qualified for this World Cup with one game to spare. So I don't think anyone's truly surprised that they have struggled. But for France, you are a bit more surprised that this team has not gelled a bit better.
Yeah, for me, France, man for man, are the stronger team when you look at them line up against Argentina. Argentina have arguably left two or three of their most talented players on the bench to see if they can make an impact maybe in the second half or change the game up. But France, you just look across their lineup, they're so strong pretty much in every position. It's tough to see a visible weakness, how to attack them, how to win the game, because they can probably play in some slightly different styles as well. They've got so much talent. But again, Didier Deschamps has failed yet to really get them playing in a convincing system or have that belief that they can turn a performance in. So maybe today's the day that they switch up a gear, they find their some of those key players step up and take the game by the scruff of the neck and put in a convincing performance. But France were my pre-tournament pick to win the tournament, so I'm not going to change now. Like Shawnee's wavering between the two. I'm going to stay with France. I think for talent-wise, that they can go a long way in the tournament.
I'm trying to not resort to cliches here, Shawnee, but I'm probably going to give in, and I'm going to have to. But because we usually see, don't we, an experienced side win a World Cup. If you look at the last few, Germany 4 years ago, were they had that perfect blend of players reaching their peak, their peak potential. Is this French side just a little too green, a little too inexperienced for that? Because you look at Spain in 2010, that was the culmination of a golden Spanish generation. Brazil back in 2002, same kind of thing. Italy, well, they were always there or thereabouts, weren't they, in World Cups, and they won, of course, in 2006 with a very, very experienced and a very defensively solid side. But the likes of Del Piero, Cannavaro had reached a peak there. So is this French team, is it just a little bit too young and a bit too inexperienced?
I'm not sure. It's impossible to know fully, I suppose, but for me, I wouldn't say so, because if you look at the players, look at the leagues that they're playing, look at the games that they, and the competitions they're playing in, week out, the Premier League, Serie A, the Spanish League, they're playing Champions League football. So they're not new to tournament football. So I think it would be an easy bit of a cop-out to say that maybe they're a bit inexperienced, because they have a lot of experience in that team. I think it just basically comes down to, like I said before, I don't know if it's the manager. Do they believe in what he's trying to do? Do they believe in the system that he wants to play? I'm not sure. Look, we might be sat here in 2 or 3 weeks' time and they might be World Cup champions.
And then we will look very foolish. Yeah. We will never let this conversation see
Correct.
The light of day again.
Exactly.
At least I won't. Arch has been talking them up. Yes, you will be unbearable. You'll be insufferable if France win the World Cup, Arch.
For four years.
You usually just pick the favourites. France were not the clear-cut favourites, that's for sure. They were among four or five teams that I think everyone felt had a chance. I got to ask though as well, that we talk about the pressure that's being placed on Lionel Messi, the talisman. I must say, the pressure being placed on Kylian Mbappe, who's so young, he's 19 years of age, so much is expected of him. That season he had with Monaco, I think there was just an assumption that he's a world-class star and he's there, he's made it, he's emerged now on the big stage. Were we getting ahead of ourselves there? Because at that age, how difficult is it to replicate performances? Lionel Messi at 19 was not doing it week in, week out. Why should Kylian Mbappe?
Well, that's true. I think, but we love to put pressure on players with potential, don't we? Like the press and the media and everything. We like you say, we see him have a great season with Monaco, and then all of a sudden we say, well, that's it. He's a finished, ready-made world-class player, and it's not the case, because, he's only 19 years old. Like,
it's crazy.
It's mental.
Transferred to PSG for what was it, 160
yeah,
million or
yeah.
something?
But we do this all the time with players. And how many times have we seen it? Players in years gone by where we say this guy. Look at like Adnan Januzaj as well, for example. When he burst onto the scene, he popped into my head. Then when he came on the scene at United, everyone said, "Oh, this is like the next Ryan Giggs." Whatever. And he's just kind of drifted into obscurity a little bit. I think we put too much pressure on players. I think we do.
England will have been served a timely reminder of Adnan Januzaj in the last couple of days, and it's amazing. Amazing how often old players come back to haunt certain teams in those situations. But yeah, Mbappe, I just feel too much is expected of him. Paul Pogba again, another player who I think the world is expected of him, and that's not so much because of the big money move to Manchester United. He's got a huge profile, hasn't he? And he's shown, certainly when he was at Juventus, also on occasion in a French shirt, even once or twice in a Manchester United shirt, when he does seize a game by the scruff of the neck, he rampages through a game.
He can
burst from the centre circle to the penalty box. That he's got a way of playing that can take games away from other teams, and not many players have that ability. But he seems to flit in and out of games,
and that's the problem. It's the consistent in it. But again, we put so much pressure and expectation on Paul Pogba. I mean, I don't think there's anything he could do in a game where he still wouldn't be criticised. Unless he goes into this game, for example, and scores a hat-trick and they win 3-0, then we can say, oh, Paul Pogba's a world-class player. But if he has a good game today but doesn't do, you know, too many great things, we'll probably still find a way of criticising him. I think, we, like I said before, we put too much pressure and we have too much expectation on these players. But that being said, his talent and his ability and his potential... is undoubted. Like, you've seen it at Juventus, and like you say, you've seen it a couple of times at United and a little bit with France. But, you know, if he wants to be Paul Pogba, the big brand that he is, he has to do it week in, week out for club and country, and he just doesn't do that.
You just feel that this game, more than anything, will be decided by which of these teams can actually seize the moment and go out there and perform to the best of their ability. More build-up on France versus Argentina. We are approaching just over half an hour away from kickoff in that one. We're with you through all the way up until kickoff at 6 p.m. but I'm also aware that there is the small matter of qualifying for the Austrian Grand Prix ongoing at the moment. Mark Archer, you've got the update.
Yeah, Q1 has finished for the Austrian Grand Prix. I can tell you that the fastest 10 cars, well, number one still is the man, Lewis Hamilton, who leads the points race for the Formula One Championship. He has finished the fastest in qualifying one. Teammate Valtteri Bottas has also finished second, so it's Mercedes 1-2 so far. Third place, Kimi Raikkonen. Surprise here in fourth is Grosjean. Roman Grosjean has had a great run in Q1. Max Verstappen is in fifth. Sebastian Vettel lowly back in sixth place for the Ferrari. Magnussen, Daniel Ricciardo in eighth. Hülkenberg and then Sainz. That rounds out the top 10. I can tell you that... the eliminated drivers from Q1, Van Dorn, Perez, Sorokin, Hartley and Ericsson have been eliminated from Q1. They'll start at the back of the grid, and qualifying 2 will get underway in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah, we'll have a result of qualifying before we go off air at 6 p.m. So stay tuned if you want to know all the latest on Formula 1 qualifying over in Austria. Antoine Griezmann has been speaking to the press. He's also hoping to improve his performances, Sean O'Shea, in this round of 16. And it happened at the Euros for him, where France almost just gritted their way through the group stages, and then they really started to play well all the way up until that final, where in fairness they did not show up in that loss to Portugal over in the Euro 2016. But Antoine Griezmann has been saying, hope to raise my level in the last 16. It was the same at the Euros. It wasn't until the last 16 that I hit my stride. We'll see. I have confidence in my game. He's had one goal thus far. That was a penalty in that opening game against Australia from 9 shots on goal. So clearly France are going to need to take their chances. We saw Kylian Mbappe score off that ricochet from a shot from Olivier Giroud, but they have been a little goal shy, have France. What is it, just 3 goals so far in this tournament? 2 against Australia, that goal against Peru, and the goalless draw against Denmark.
Yeah, they have. I mean, look, that attacking line there, Mbappe, Giroud, Griezmann, you would expect goals to come from them, and especially Griezmann. Like you say, in the Euros, he was fantastic. So maybe look now, we say it's the business end now. If you lose, you're out. So all these players have to step up, and hopefully we see a bit of a spectacle. But you would expect more from people like Griezmann. Like I say, he was so good in the last tournament, and he is a great striker. We've seen that. But let's see what happens now going into this game.
It's just there's so much speculation, much intrigue surrounding this game. No one really quite knows how it's going to go. Lionel Messi could score a hat-trick. France could demolish Argentina. Argentina could put in another performance like they did against Croatia. And if they did that, you'd fancy the French would be far too strong for them. But who knows? That is the beauty of sport. We're all three of us are sat here just guessing which way it might go and changing our minds every 5 seconds. Let us know on 4001 who is winning this game. Clear it up for us. Let us know. Get in touch with us. 4001 if you want to join the conversation. And we'll look ahead to some of the other matches in the last 16 when we come back.
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, bringing the football stadium to you this summer.
Yeah, it is 5:34 in the afternoon. We are 26 minutes, therefore, away from the start of the round of 16 of this FIFA World Cup. Argentina taking on France. We've had a lot of you message in on 4001. Do join the conversation. Drop us a message and join in. We've had a message basically saying that this is like a semi-final, I think, from Alex. Today's FIFA World Cup game is like having 2 semi-finals in the round of 16. He's also referring to Portugal-Uruguay. Well, given how these teams were playing, they have stayed back. Sean O'Shea, let's move on, if we can, to that second semi-final. Adil says that Portugal's inexperience got them the Euros. Underdog to win the World Cup. How much will that win at Euro 2016 be playing on the minds of those Portuguese players? How much belief will they be taking from that going into this game against Uruguay?
Well, I think they can take a lot of confidence from it, because obviously winning a major tournament like that will give them the necessary experience to dig deep when they need to and go and win a tournament. I've not been overly convinced with Portugal this World Cup. I think the Spain-Portugal game was probably my favourite game still so far of the World Cup, the 3-3.
Yeah.
But they haven't been brilliant, Portugal. They weren't great against Iran. They weren't brilliant against Morocco. I see Uruguay winning this. I really do. I think Uruguay will do. I think this is Portugal's last game in the World Cup.
Big statement. Big statement. Well,
and
what
I'm probably wrong. As usual.
What about Mark Archer? Do you think that Portugal will find their way through?
Yeah, they seem to get results when they're not playing that well or unconvincing. So I just think with Portugal, they've got enough good players surrounded by, you know, with Cristiano Ronaldo there, who does take games by the scruff of the neck. He does get in the middle of the action. He demands the ball. He demands to take the free kicks. He demands to be passed to. He's the leader of that team. And the rest of the team, he brings a lot of those pretty average players, let's be honest, in some of the Portugal team. He brings them to another standard by wanting to play with Cristiano, to play at his standard. He drives such high standards of that team. And that's what I don't see about Argentina. I don't see some of those players wanting to play at the level of Messi. They want to pass Messi the ball and watch him. Whereas I think the success of Portugal, particularly in the Euros, is Ronaldo has that motivating factor. He says, you need to live your game if you want to live with me. Otherwise, I'm going to do it all myself. Big, big difference of attitude there. So I think the Ronaldo factor, the stardust that he has, is enough for get them past Uruguay.
Uruguay have started to really find their form, haven't they? They had a very impressive in that big victory over Russia. They nicked the first couple of games over Egypt and Saudi Arabia 1-0 apiece. They left it late against Egypt, but they really started to play well against Russia, Shawnee, and haven't conceded a goal yet in this tournament. I suppose that's the foundation of this Uruguay side. They're tough to get at. They're tough to score against. Diego Godin, we know what a great defender he is. Jimenez as well. Is that where... That's the rock, the foundation, yeah, for the great strikers that they've got up top?
I think so, yeah. I think, like you said, with Uruguay, the stats are great for them. They haven't conceded. They won three games. They've built a little bit of momentum. They've got two great strikers in Cavani and Suarez. Really, really good. And then, like you said, Diego Godin at the back. And I just think that there'll be too much for Portugal. I think they're very well organised. They'll bully Portugal. They will make a point of bullying Ronaldo. There's that kind of Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid link there as well, that rivalry. And I think it'll be enough. I think they're strong enough and aggressive enough to bully them out of the game, but they've also got the quality where it counts up top to score the goals.
This has got a gritty 0-0 or 1-1 written all over it, extra time and possibly even penalties.
I would
not be surprised.
Yeah, you wouldn't be surprised if it was 0-0 and go to penalties, but we hope not. It could be the same with France-Argentina, but we hope for entertaining games.
You don't enjoy a penalty shootout?
I do when I'm not involved in them, yeah, but I would rather see a 3-2 or a 4-3 than going all the way to penalties.
Shawnee, we talked about the makeup of the Argentinian team and you think there's quite a negative setup. Both these games, we say it often when we watch Premier League football, so when the big teams take on the lower teams, both these games could probably do with an early goal to try and bring one team out of the shell. Whoever scores that early goal, it's a bit of a game-changing factor.
Well, they have to change the whole game plan, don't they? And I think if France score first, which would be, I think, ideal for us, that's when you'd see the changes. That's when you see Aguero, Higuain, Dybala, because, you know, if they get a goal in the first 10 minutes, the whole game plan for Argentina, or what we assume is their game plan, is going to go completely out of the window. So, yeah, you're right. In these instances now, an early goal would be brilliant. But I just think, because we're going into the knockout phase of the tournament, an early goal, I think, would be cautious first 10 or 15 minutes. They'll be weighing each other up and seeing how exactly they're playing, and then kind of come up with a plan from there, I think.
Well, we're excited about those two games. 6 p.m. for France, Argentina, 10 p.m. for Portugal, Uruguay. What of the rest of the round of 16 games? There's six more matches other than these to have a look at and to preview now. Tomorrow's games feature Spain against the host Russia and Croatia taking on Denmark. Your initial thoughts on those two, Shawnee?
Well, I think my initial thought is Russia would be happy to have got through the group stage of the host nation. They played very well. You would think that Spain would probably beat them, but again, Spain haven't been brilliant in this tournament at all, I don't think. The games that I've watched, I don't think they've been great. And with the nation behind them, you know, Russia could cause an upset in that game tomorrow.
You really think that?
They could do, because Spain just haven't performed. And look, I keep saying, you're going into a different phase of the tournament now, so maybe they'll ramp it up. They've certainly got the quality. They've got a great squad and they've got the ability and the potential to beat them, and you would expect them to. But it's been a strange World Cup, and I just think Russia have done well. They've got the country behind them. Spain haven't been playing too well. Maybe there's a chance of an upset.
Have you been impressed by that Russian side? I know Golovin has been impressive, Cheriev as well. They've had some players going forward that have done damage, but that Uruguay result will have hurt them because that was a real reality check.
Well, it was. Look, and it's like we talked about Belgium-England. That was the first real test for them, and the Uruguay game was a real test for Russia, and they failed at it. To be quite honest, but I still think they've been more impressive than I thought they would be. I didn't think much about them coming into the World Cup. I don't know a great deal about all of their players, but they've been impressive, to be fair. They've done okay and they've got through the group stages, and anything can happen now in the knockout stage of the tournament. And look, they've got the country behind them, bit of a momentum.
Are you predicting a win for Russia here?
It sounds like it.
It really does.
I'm not going to say the word predict.
This will allow you to say "I told you so" yes. If Russia indeed do go through.
Correct,
Archer. You're surely being a man who, well, always backs the favourites in most situations. Come on,
I think there's
Spain
two
all the way, isn't it?
No, yeah, I think there's two very clear-cut results tomorrow, and it's not that difficult to work out that Spain will comfortably defeat Russia, and Croatia will get past Denmark. And I don't think there'll be. I think they'll win, but both teams will win by a couple of goals. I just think there's too much.
You are dismissing the tension of knockout football there.
No, there's too much pedigree and talent in the Spanish team and in the Croatian team. I've seen these matches could be quite one-sided and quite heavy victories for both teams. I think Russia will feel they've probably achieved what they set out to achieve in the tournament by advancing past the group stage. Many people wrote them off as the worst team in the World Cup, and they had that great win against Saudi Arabia. They've got a bit of momentum into the tournament, but I just think that Spain might not let them touch the ball tomorrow. They'll dominate possession, and they'll be far too strong for Russia. They could score a bunch of goals, and I think Croatia have shown that they've been the best team so far throughout three games, and Croatia, nothing's showing me that Denmark can get past Croatia. So for me, solid wins for both Spain and Croatia tomorrow.
Clearly you missed Spain's game against Morocco, because Morocco can count themselves very unfortunate that they didn't get more out of that game. But yeah, Shawnee, are you agreeing with Croatia-Denmark, that assessment? Have been a really impressive side so far.
Yeah, look, they've really impressed me. Like I said earlier, I think they have the potential to maybe go all the way if they continue to play in the manner that they have done. Denmark, again, they'll be happy that they've got out of the group. That's a success for them, I think. But then, that being said, there's no pressure on them now. I think all the pressure is probably on Croatia tomorrow. But yeah, I think they'll be too strong for many. We can expect a Croatia win.
Okay, so France, Argentina, I'm not sure we have a clue.
No.
Uruguay, Portugal, ditto. We're all a little bit hesitant. These first two games really are the coin flips, aren't they? Spain and Croatia. But Shawnee is half saying that Russia might spring an upset.
It's possible.
You're just throwing that out there to cover your bases.
Yeah.
Brazil, Mexico. And I've got to say, Mexico actually have a very good track record against Brazil. They did show a lot of ability in that win over Germany, didn't they? Germany were poor, but Mexico were very incisive in that game. And Brazil, there's a feeling, I think, that they're growing into this tournament now. The oft used expression that they're a tournament team who are now starting to go through the gears, and they were impressive against Serbia. But could Mexico do the unthinkable here and knock out Brazil?
To be honest, I don't think so. I think they were very good against Germany. I think we got a little bit excited about them because they weren't great. And then I watched the game against Sweden the other day, and they were very, very poor. They were so poor against Sweden. And I think Brazil, going the other way, didn't start great, but have grown into it a little bit now, and they'll have the confidence and momentum to get past Mexico, I think.
Arch, you'd agree with that?
Yeah, very much so. I think this game could be feisty. It could be a real sort of Central American, South American clash. There could be some cards out early. I think Mexico, the only way Mexico can beat Brazil is if they fluster them, if they maybe score an early goal and get some momentum, and it's a aggressive performance by Mexico. If they sit back and play like they did against Sweden, I mean, again, I think you can see Brazil getting a couple of goals up in this match and then just dominating possession for fun.
Just on Brazil, Shawnee, and I think they probably would be most people's idea of the favourite as things stand. Neymar has spent more time on the deck than he has upright and actually walking around and running around on a football pitch. And given the fact that he's coming off the back of this long injury layoff, we can't expect him to be at his absolute peak form. And we saw 4 years ago when they lost Neymar, what happened to them? They unravelled. It's a different side now. It's a much better organised side. That much is evident. They're a much stronger side top to bottom than they were 4 years ago. But that being said, is the fact that Neymar is not at the top of his game going to cost them late on?
Well, I think they've got a strong enough squad to be able to support him where he's not 100%. I think, we talked about players of the tournament, and Coutinho for me has been up there. very different to the last time out in the World Cup, like you say, when they completely fell to pieces. I think they're a lot more organised, a lot more structured, players are more experienced, and I think, you know, we talked about Argentina and Messi and France with Pogba. I think with Brazil, because they've got other players around who are doing well and scoring goals, I think there's less pressure on Neymar. I know we've spoke at length about our frustrations with him, about how much time he spends on the deck. It would be, for me, I think he needs to concentrate on his game a lot more. Forget about the play acting and going down under the heavy tackles. Just get on with the game, because he will be effective in that game against Mexico. There's no doubt about that. Even if he's not 100%, you'd rather have him at 90% and playing than another player in the squad.
You can call on Philippe Coutinho and Gabriel Jesus as your backup,
exactly,
forwards to Neymar. You know you've got a strong proposition going forward. So that is Brazil versus Mexico. The assumption from us, at least, is that Brazil will be too strong for Mexico. Belgium, Japan, and frankly, Japan are the luckiest team in this round of 16 to actually even be there, Mark Archer, because they got there the first ever on fair play.
Yeah, they were all tied up on points, all tied up on goals, the goal difference, and they got through because they only had 4 cards as opposed to Senegal's 6 cards in the group stages. So they were very lucky to go through. They didn't know the result of that. Their match when it finished, and then they found out the result of the Senegal match, of course, those cards there. So I would expect that Belgium will comfortably get past Japan. And I'm going to make a really bold prediction here. I'm going to go out and say that Belgium beat Brazil in the quarterfinal.
Oh, we're not even previewing the quarterfinal yet.
I'll move deep into the future of next week, and I'll say I think Belgium will beat Brazil in the quarterfinal.
He's really pinning his colours to the mast there.
Really is, yeah.
That is extraordinary stuff. We're not even there yet, Arch. You're getting ahead of yourself. Belgium to beat Japan.
Yeah, look, I think it's the easiest. It's no disrespect to Japan at all, but it's obviously the easiest tie, I think, for Belgium for the second round, for the last 16, sorry. I think Belgium will comfortably beat Japan in that game.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go ahead and say anything about Belgium playing Brazil, but they will definitely get through Japan.
For all the talk ahead of England-Belgium as to that it would be much more advantageous to wind up in the bottom half of the draw, ironically, Belgium are in that tougher half with Brazil, with Argentina, with France, with Portugal, with Uruguay, but they've got probably the easiest opponent of any of the big teams.
Absolutely.
Still left in this competition, whereas England have a tricky tie against Colombia.
They certainly do, and to be honest with you, I don't see them getting past Colombia on
not
Tuesday.
I'm sure I do either.
I don't see it. I think, look, they were great against Panama, but Panama were very poor. They got a late win against Tunisia. They've changed the starting 11 and lost to Belgium. There's nothing really sticking out to me saying that they can go and beat Colombia. I think Colombia started poorly and have come very well, or have come a lot better into the tournament. I think Colombia beat them. I really do.
I think Colombia will need a fit James Rodriguez.
Yeah, that's key.
And the way he limped off with that reoccurring calf injury that he's been plaguing him for a while now, he's key. He's their talisman. He's the guy that pops up with a little bit of genius. I mean, Radamel Falcao, the experience that he's got, he's a great striker. He's proven in European leagues. But James Rodriguez is really the talisman for that team. And if he doesn't play, I really give England a strong chance. I think England as a team, whilst we don't talk about the big names in the English team, there's not a lot of guys that stand out. They've got some talent, but I just think them as a team have got the momentum going in the right direction. I don't think we can read anything into the Belgium match because of such a changed side. I think they've got enough. I think it'll be a very close match. It'll be a 1-0, but I think England have enough to get past Colombia.
Yeah, I just wonder in that clash of styles whether England's style, it might play well for England if they're pressing high, that they're not a team that really likes to keep the ball and pass it around a lot. The set piece that they're very effective with. I don't want to be too optimistic. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I need to be. I haven't quite caught that it's coming home syndrome.
Oh, you have played it in the car though.
Yeah, I have. I did play the Three Lions.
You haven't gone and got a tattoo yet, Robbie?
No, I haven't. Yeah, no, I've held off until we at least reach the quarterfinals. But it's another coin flip. It really is. I mean, Colombia, forget James Rodriguez. Quintaro has been great. Cuadrado has also been very good. Davinson Sanchez has been pretty solid at the back. He made that fantastic challenge, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
On Sadio Mane in the Senegal game, which ultimately proved to be crucial for Colombia. So James Rodriguez is a big loss, but I don't think he's as big a loss as, say, Harry Kane not being available for England. So I think as important as he is, I wouldn't say that Colombia could not go through if James Rodriguez is not fit.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And Falcao as well. We've got to mention Falcao.
Falcao, of course.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. I think my problem with England, I've said it before on the other shows that we did, is that they're just very one-dimensional. They set up well. Everybody knows the sort of roles in the team, but they just don't have anything on the bench. Everything's like for like, so I just think they're very predictable in the way that they're going to play.
They're playing a good version of, with the collection of individuals that they've got, I think they're playing pretty much on the level that we could possibly expect from them. Previous England teams have underperformed and fell well below expectations. For me, this England team is meeting them, but it's just not a great team. That's the bottom line. It's not got the quality that some of the other teams can call upon.
Yeah, I mean, like outside of Harry Kane, who stands out as a world-class player in England?
Well, you could make an argument for Dele Alli, couldn't you? But yeah, I get it. Yeah. If you're relying on Loftus-Cheek and Eric Dier and Jordan Henderson even, as solid as he is, he's a guy that needs good players around him. But that's England-Colombia. Just finally, quickly, guys, before we take a short break, Sweden-Switzerland. That is the grit fest. Yeah. Forget Uruguay. Forget Uruguay against Portugal, which might end up being an all-out fist fight. That one, to me, is just two very well-organised, very well-drilled, very physical sides going leather and tongs.
It has penalty shootout Renault over that one, doesn't it? Yeah,
without being disrespectful, you could almost say that one just goes straight to the penalties.
That is being hugely disrespectful to a team that beat Mexico 3-0 in Sweden.
Yeah, I mean, we could have saved ourselves 90 minutes. But this is the games that surprise us. That, you know, a couple of early goals and it's all on. But there's not a lot of, and I'll say this in the right way, not a lot of world-class talent amongst those two teams. Players that stand out that, you know, dominate teams or leagues in Europe. But there's a lot of good, solid professionals that do a job for their team. They tend to maximise the sum of the parts when they play for their country, and they'll never let your country down if you're supporting them. It's just whether there's that spark of individuality, but at that moment of brilliance, where is it going to come from to take any of those teams much further in this round? But it'd be interesting. It's a bit interesting clash of styles.
Hey, listen, Switzerland gave Brazil a very good game. They did very well to finish runner-up in their group. Sweden as well got back off the floor, having been almost dead and buried after that Toni Kroos free kick, to beat Mexico in thrilling style and actually top that group F. So all is not lost for those two teams, although that's the game I'd most happily miss, if I'm being honest with you, of all the eight matches. When we come back, more build-up for Argentina-France. We're only 10 minutes away now. We'll have a result as well, I think, from Formula One qualifying over in Austria. Stay tuned.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, in association with Barasti Superdome, the only place to view football this summer.
The sense of anticipation has reached high levels. We are watching pictures of the TV screen in Kazan. The first knockout round between France and Argentina. Lionel Messi standing on the steps that lead down to this pitch. Angel Di Maria, head bowed, looking down. Antoine Griezmann in reflective mood as well. The players look focused. This will be the biggest game of football that any of these players have played in this, for the last 4 years, Sean O'Shea. The World Cup is the biggest tournament. It is the one they all want to win, and this is now. This is time to stand and deliver for those players. We will continue our build-up in the last 5-6 minutes or so that we have with you here on The Grill down at Barasti. But before we do that, there is ongoing qualification in the Formula One Grand Prix over in Austria. Mark Archer, give us an update.
Yeah, Q3 is now underway. I can tell you the 10 cars, the 10 drivers that have qualified for the final stages of qualifying. Topping the table so far, Sebastian Vettel put in a great lap from Ferrari. So he's finished first at the moment going into Q3. It's the two Mercedes of Hamilton and Bottas in 2 and 3. Kimi Raikkonen rounds out the top four from Ferrari. Max Verstappen, Roman Grosjean, Kevin Magnussen, Daniel Ricciardo, Carlos Sainz and Nico Hülkenberg. That makes up your top 10 for the final qualifying session. The cars are out. I'll bring you pole position, the top three on the grid, in about 3 to 4 minutes, Robbie.
I've got to agree with Alex, one of our listeners who messaged in a little bit earlier on in the show. This does feel like it shouldn't be a round of 16 match. It has the feel of a quarter, a semi-final about it. Argentina, 2014 World Cup finalists. France, finalists in 2006. Winners in 1998. They've only won one World Cup. Argentina, a two-time winner. Can either of these sides go on to claim this World Cup trophy, I wonder. We're about to find out. We'll be a lot more informed on that particular question in a very short amount of time, Sean O'Shea. But final thoughts from you as we build up to this one. The stadium in Kazan is packed. The players now lining up for the national anthems. And it's time to stand and deliver for both France and Argentina.
It is. I mean, look, it looks like a great setting. I'd love to be at that game today, but it feels exciting now, doesn't it? I can't wait for this game to get started. But I think thinking about it and what we've talked about now, looking at it and the players out there, I'm going to go France. I'm going to go France to win this game.
Aptly, because their national anthem is currently playing. We're seeing...
So in the space of 3 hours, Shawnee, you've just changed teams.
Yeah, very indecisive today.
That's poor predicting there, Shawnee, but there you go. We'll allow you that. You did say that Russia will shock Spain. I'm going to hold you to that. It is amazing. You learn a lot about a nation by the way they sing their own national anthem. Most of the English players mumble through it. Most of the Colombian players, they're in tears as their national anthem plays. It just shows, it speaks to the personality of all those nations. But the French national anthem playing now, we're just a few minutes away from kickoff, 4 minutes to be precise, Mark Archer. I'm sure you are heading to watch this game if you are not already in place and watching the game. Arch, you're going to stick with France?
Yeah, I'm going to go with France. They're my pre-tournament pick, so I'm not going to eliminate them at the round of 16, but I think too much strength and depth, too many world-class players across the starting 11 and some strength off the bench as well. But if you are looking for somewhere to watch the match, head on down to Barasti. Terrific atmosphere down here. Plenty of French shirts, Argentinian shirts, and of course, plenty of two big blockbuster matches coming. So looking forward to the kickoff. France-Argentina coming your way now.
Well, it's refreshing to see that Lionel Messi is not cupping his head in his hands like he did in, I think, the first national anthem against... That was the game against Croatia. He seemed so stressed during the national anthem, and that led in part, I suppose, or maybe not, Croatia just outplayed them, but that did lead, of course, to that big defeat at the hands of Croatia. Javier Mascherano not singing, but looking up towards the stands, and these Argentinian players, they look pensive. They know that with all the troubles they've had that is going on off the camp, with Jorge Sampaoli, with the spectre of Diego Maradona looking on from the stands, that they know that this is a game of football that can redeem them. If they can reach the quarterfinals, I think a lot of people will be surprised if they can beat France. Shawnee, I need a score prediction.
I'm going to go 2-1 France.
2-1 France. Mark Archer.
I was going to go 2-1 France as well, but just to be different than Shawnee, I'll go 2-0 France.
Okay, I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to be the contrarian, as always, and that usually gets me in trouble. But I'm going to say that Argentina are going to do this. I'm not sure how they're going to do it. I've looked at the lineup, I've looked at the way they've been playing thus far, and I'm basing this on nothing other than blind hope that Lionel Messi can inspire his team. Wouldn't it be amazing if he's able to put in another starring performance, a bit like he did against Nigeria a few days ago?
The biggest prediction we should really be looking to, Robbie, is what does Farah the Falcon say? I know you've been holding it back, but kickoff is now due. Can you reveal what Farah the Falcon has predicted for this match?
I can exclusively and sensationally reveal that Farah the Falcon has gone. She's an old romantic, clearly. She's gone with Argentina. She wants to see Lionel Messi win this at the final chance, the last chance saloon for the Argentinian, a man who nearly retired from international football back in last year. He's had a change of heart. He's back. He's with a dysfunctional side that are arguing. There's infighting. There's civil war. There's anarchy off the pitch. On the pitch, they've looked dishevelled at times. They've looked disorganised. Can they pull it all together with the talent that they've got, the great players that they've got on and off their bench against a very talented French team? That is it. The moment has arrived. We need to wrap up because we need to focus on watching this game, as I'm sure you do as well. Thank you for listening to The Grill. It's been an absolute pleasure, as it always is, down here at Barasti from 3 until 6 on your Saturday afternoon, delivering you all the live sport, all the look back on the weekend of sport that was. We will be back as well at the Bridgewater Tavern from 7 tomorrow for yet more World Cup analysis. We'll be looking back on these games. We'll be looking ahead to the game at 10 p.m. tomorrow evening and focusing on that live game at 7 p.m. as well. So don't forget to tune in to Dubai 103.8. For now, it's France versus Argentina, and I, for one, cannot wait. Good night.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.